It's time to talk Pac-12 football. This is the Pac-12 Insider here on ESPN 700. The Pac-12 Insider is presented by Les Olson IT. Now for the latest on Pac-12 football, here's the Pac-12 Insider here on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
Sean O'Connell's going to join us here momentarily. Spring football begins for Kyle Whittingham's guys today. They'll go for a month. Spring game coming up on April 22nd. We'll have that one for you right here on ESPN 700 from Rice-Eccles Stadium. 163 days until the Florida Gators pay a visit to Rice-Eccles Stadium. So we'll talk about that and more coming up with our friend and Pac-12 radio host from SiriusXM. He does the show weekly with daily and weekly, I guess, depending on what time of year it is, with Jeff Schwartz on Channel 373. I may ask him this question about his favorite Pac-12 school, not named Utah, momentarily, the Colorado Buffaloes, but we welcome Sean O'Connell, OC, to the program. How are you?
Bill, how are you?
I'm doing great. Let me start with this, because somebody just shot me this text message on the text line. What's up with Colorado? Is Dion making them for real or just a show? Go ahead and handle that, Sean.
Well, TBD, but I think more for real than just show. I mean, it's going to take time, and that's one thing that people don't generally give coaches, right? But at Rick George at Colorado and everyone associated with that hiring have made it clear that, you know, this is a long game. This is the long haul. They've spent the money. They've invested not only in facility improvements coming, but in policy changes at the University of Colorado so that they can be more welcoming to transfer students and that kind of thing. Like, it's going to be for real if they can get Dion to stick around for more than 2 years, but that's going to be tough if he has any kind of success, because the SEC will come calling, the ACC will come calling, the Big Ten might come calling. But I think, you know, he's bringing in good players, and every coach will tell you that that's really what matters. Do you have players? And the answer for Colorado for the last several years has been mostly no. With Dion there, it'll be mostly yes.
I agree with all of that. I think they'll be better this year. I tell people not to expect a Lincoln Riley turnaround, but I would expect, because the schedule's really tough. They could open up 1-5, 1-4 for sure. But then the back end gets a little bit easier. The big thing with him is he's done a really good job with the portal and bringing guys in, capitalizing on his name with skill guys. But you know this, people know this, coaches around the league know this. You don't really become for real until you're real in the trenches. And right now, Colorado's not real in the trenches.
Yeah, and that's going to be done for them through the transfer portal especially, right? You're going to get guys that are rollbacks from Georgia, that are rollbacks from Texas A&M, that are guys that thought that they were going to excel at LSU. And, you know, they probably don't have the immediate success that they want at places like that. And Dion and his staff are going to go talk to those guys. And they're going to say, come here, give us 2 years, give us 3 years, and we'll make you an NFL player. Which is what all those guys want, right? I mean, Dion got himself into a little bit of hot water talking about, like, the kind of player he wants on his offensive trench versus the player he wants on his defensive trench, saying the quiet part out loud. But, like, he knows exactly what he wants, and he's going to go get it. So it will take some time, and it's not going to be like at Jackson State where you bring 4- and 5-star players in there and they can go both ways and they can crush everybody, because most of the teams that he's going to be playing against are going to have a few of those 4- and 5-star guys as well. And that wasn't the case when he was at a 1AA school.
So I've got some good off-air stories for you. I've talked to a lot of people at Colorado, but I can't share some of that stuff on the air. So when we get together to enjoy some Salsa Queen salsa and a beverage, we'll swap some stories. Here's my question for you on Utah as we dive into spring football here. 163 days till the Gators come here. Assuming Cam Rising is healthy and that he is going to be playing this fall, and we'll assume that. There have been no setbacks in his rehab yet. What's the worry that you have about this Utah football team that could keep him from three-peating?
Well, less worry about Utah and more worry about what Oregon's going to be, what USC is going to be, things like that. I think Utah is going to be a really solid, good team that's capable of beating everybody on their schedule. The schedule is rough, right? Of all of the power teams, all of the actual contenders in the Pac-12 conference, Utah has the toughest schedule. And that's not great, right? They've had some good luck with injuries and some bad luck with injuries, depending on, you know, who you're talking about. You need for them to stay on the good luck side of that proposition to three-peat this year. And I guess, you know, I think that we're not talking enough because we've grown to trust Jim Harding and his recruiting and his development so much. We're not talking enough about how big of a deal it is to lose a player like Braden Daniels, right? So that's always a concern when your offensive line is so important to the kind of offense that you're trying to run now, which is finally balanced at the University of Utah. You know, you're going to have an unconventional group of threats in the passing game. You're going to have a quality quarterback because we're operating under the same assumption that Cam Rising is good and healthy. And then you're going to have an excellent running game. But all of that only goes if you got really seven guys that can play along the offensive line. And they've had that. So maybe I shouldn't be worried about it, but every spring I say the same thing. And every fall camp I say the same thing. I need to know who those guys are, which five are going to be in the best places, right? Because they do the best available thing. Best players, now get them used to a position. Spring ball is where that starts. So that's my question.
So my guess there, and I'm with you, I've got like the five things to watch in the spring. And all, to me, it's the offensive tackles, I think, because I feel like Keaton Bills might be among the best overall linemen in the league. I think Keaton Bills is a monster at left guard. I feel like Johnny Maiea is probably going to be the center with Paul Miley moving along. And I feel like on that right side, Michael Mokafisi was really, really good last year, and I feel like that might be his job. So, you know, who are the tackles? You know, when I talked to Kyle Whittingham after the year, right after the year, he kind of talked a little bit about moving Laumea from the right tackle spot to the left tackle spot, which is what they did with Braden Daniels, what they've done in the past. That kind of leaves you with the right tackle spot. And they've got several guys they feel like can step in there, and maybe it's Falcon or maybe it's somebody else. But I feel like really right now it's one position, assuming that Laumea makes the transition from right side to left side. Would you agree?
Yeah, when you break it down like that, I think that's correct. And, you know, Laumea is an excellent player. Now, it's not an easy thing to make that move, but he's got plenty of time, and I think he's a good enough athlete that he'll be able to do it. So, yeah, maybe – you know what, you've actually assuaged my concerns a little bit. I think if you have one starting spot really to figure out on that offensive line, I think the group that they've brought in, those bodies, those young bodies, those developing bodies, they've got at least one of those guys that can be a full-time starter for you. And then it's about depth, but, you know, offensive line depth is a myth. It's not something that most teams have.
No, I mean, and again, there's been so much depth in recent years. Maybe it's this kid, Zeroway Williams, 6'8", 305. Are you kidding me? Maybe it's Jaron Kump, although he's more of an inside guy, I think, than an outside guy. You know, there's so much size. And I mentioned Falcon as well, 6'8", 303, a Gorman kid who's been in the program now for 3 years. They've got some dudes there, but here's what I think we're going to see this spring, Sean, because Jim Harding loves to do this. He loves to move guys around. He loves to use kind of like spring football to move guys into different places to see where they can maybe be if the emergency pops up later in the year.
Which I think is the right thing to do. You know, there's a lot of coaches, and fewer in the game, but there's a lot of coaches who get fixated on like, oh, this guy's a guard. This guy's a right tackle. He's so good at that position. I don't want to mess with it, right? I don't want to give him anything that's going to confuse him. That's old school. That's not how offensive line needs to be played anymore. Now you find your best athletes, your best overall players, and you give them time to transition into the role that they play. Look at all the guys. I mean, I started this conversation saying like, man, Braden Daniels is a big loss. Part of the reason he's a big loss is because he could play all five positions on the offensive line in a pinch, right? So Jim Harding is really, really good at making sure he's got the best five players available every week out on the field. And positionally, it's not like it doesn't matter, but having some flexibility behooves the entire squad.
Is the fourth safety a big deal? I mean, I think I was caught off guard a little bit by Isbell's decision a week ago to go into the portal, especially the way both Morgan Scalley and Kyle Whittingham talked glowingly about him, and he seemed like a pretty natural look there at the free safety spot. And again, to make that transfer pre-spring football before you've kind of gone through the drills to work it out, I'd understand if it was, you know, late April and he decided to do that because Nate Ritchie or Sione Vaki got some more reps than him. I was just caught off guard by the timing, but he'd be, you know, let's just say he's the fourth safety. Is that a big deal?
Yeah, it is a big deal because tell me the last year where Utah didn't have to use the fourth safety on their team. I mean,
yeah. Like, well, they play three a lot anyway, and usually somebody does get banged up at some point in time.
So yeah, it's a big deal, right? So that means you got to hope that there's a young player, a freshman whose name we don't really know yet, that emerges the way that Sione Vaki did, or that Bishop has, or that, you know, we expect Nate Ritchie to as soon as he, you know, gets back off the mission legs, all these things. So yeah, I mean, it is a big deal that it's not as sexy of a conversation if it's not someone who's, you know, out there quarterbacking your defense and out there on the field for every single down. But role players have been the lifeblood of Utah football for many, many, many years, right? One of the reasons, since Urban Meyer was coaching up at the University of Utah, that the team has been good and continually developed and that Kyle Whittingham has taken this thing to new heights, is because there's not a significant drop-off when a starter goes down for 2 or 3 weeks, that the guys that fill in around them are able to play well enough that you can get the win on the road. You can play well enough that you can, you know, make sure that you hold opposition to their normal totals, that they don't go off for like a career day just because your starting safety or your starting linebacker or your starting center or whatever is out. Depth is so, so, so important. And it's the reason it took time for Utah to become so good in the Pac-12 conference, right? Because they were, when this was a Mountain West squad, half of the starters on the Mountain West Utes could have been starters on a Pac-12 Utah team, probably more than half. But what happens when one of those guys gets injured? What happens when one of those guys goes down? It was the number two and the number three that there was this huge gap between what those guys were capable of and what they had to deliver on Saturdays. And that is no longer true because of depth players. So yeah, losing a fourth safety or a third linebacker, fourth linebacker, or a fourth pass rusher, it's a big deal if that guy's going to be part of your game plan. And at the University of Utah, they are going to be part of the game plan.
Well, here's the good news. It was about a month from now, a year ago, that Clayton Isbell came onto the roster. So the transfer portal is always there. And if you were able to find Clayton Isbell a year ago, you might be able to find somebody. If somebody doesn't develop, that fourth safety doesn't really kind of appear or show himself in spring football, the portal's always an option still too.
You're right. And that's where you have to trust the coaching staff. And I think that this group is certainly established with its fan base that you can absolutely trust. They're gonna have the right roster. Now, everyone else, right, is looking for those same things. So you're gonna have to make sure that those guys get the opportunity that they want and that they're the type of person that's gonna embrace the culture and is gonna like the fact that if you're the four safety, that means you're the number one special teams guy on the whole team. You gotta find someone who fits the identity of that role, but it shouldn't be a big concern. Is it a big deal that Clayton Isbell's gone? Well, yes, because you were going to use him. But if this was happening, you know, September 1st, we'd be having a different conversation. With the runway that this coaching staff has, I'm confident they'll find what they need.
All right, let's go to the important story that Kyle Whittingham and Andy Ludwig and everybody else are going to get tired of us asking about, the quarterback competition. You never want your starting quarterback to tear his ACL and miss 8 months of football. But if everything stays on track, Rising should be ready by early to mid-camp to step back in and play. That gives you all spring and most of your summer workouts to figure out what your quarterback situation is. And I don't even mean just for this year, Sean. To me, this spring and early summer and even early fall camp, I think you're figuring out if you've got your guy for the future on the roster right now. Would you agree?
I agree with that. And I think this situation, while imperfect for Cam and imperfect for Andy Ludwig, is for the young players that have an opportunity behind him, potentially the perfect storm, the perfect situation, right? Because you've got to go into spring getting all these reps. You're going to go into fall camp getting probably more reps than you normally would if Cam Rising was 100% healthy and definitively ready to go, right? So all this offseason, when you're getting the receivers and the tight ends and the running backs together for the quote-unquote voluntary workouts where you're going and you're throwing and you're running your route trees and all that stuff, that used to be Cam's show to run. It still is in some ways Cam's show to run. But now you have a bigger role as a number two quarterback, number three quarterback, potentially number one quarterback. It's the perfect scenario for these individuals to kind of put a stamp on you know, their role in the offense. And Cam Rising has been incredible at the University of Utah. He's a legend up on the hill forever, whether he takes another snap or not. But it's not like it used to be where you get injured, you get your job back immediately when you return. Like, he has to have rehab go perfectly for that timeline to work, right? So is he going to be the guy who's running out of the tunnel, quarterbacking you for one of the biggest home games, at least the biggest opponent coming in to play a home game at Rice-Eccles? Bill, you were the one who really turned the fan base on to the idea that Michigan doesn't come west of the Mississippi. And we got Michigan for Jim Harbaugh's first game, right? And that was an incredible environment. When is the last time an SEC team played a true road game against a Pac-12 team, much less in the mountain region, the mountain time zone? It does not happen. So Florida coming to Rice-Eccles Stadium is a huge deal. Are you willing to bet your mortgage that Cam Rising is going to be the starting quarterback running out of that tunnel? That you have to rely on too many variables for that to be true. So if you're a backup quarterback, right now what you're thinking is, this is my show, and until Cam yanks this ball back out of my hands, I'm the starting QB at the University of Utah. And that can be huge for everyone's development.
So as a guy that was a practice squad guy in his career, Nate Johnson was really the third string quarterback last year, didn't get lots of reps. Brandon Rose got lots of reps because he was the scout team quarterback. Now, Nate got to play in games, but that was mostly as a running back, wide receiver, not necessarily a quarterback. Is there an advantage for did Rose getting more snaps in practice as a quarterback gain any advantage? Does anybody have an advantage, do you think, coming into the spring?
Well, the best person to ask that question is Cam Rising, because what did Cam Rising do as a transfer portal guy before we called it the transfer portal, right? He ran the scout team. And what did all of his teammates tell you? Man, just watch until this Cam guy's ready to go. He's dicing up our starting defense. This guy can play, right? So, yeah, it's an advantage if you treat it like one, where you're actually getting to play the position how the position is supposed to be played, even if it's not your offense, right? You're being a quarterback every day at practice. And the sort of like indirect benefit to this is that your teammates start to acknowledge like who you are as a competitor. If you're anything like Cam Rising was, his team had already bought into the idea that he could be a starting quarterback because of what they saw him do on scout team. That's a storyline that's never talked about. You had to be going to practices, going to media availability, and listening to what players were telling you, because you didn't see it. You don't watch Cam Rising, the scout team quarterback, but they were like, man, this guy can play. This kid who transferred in from Texas is making our jobs tough on the defense, right? That was all Pac-12 starting defensive players that were telling you that 3 years ago about Cam Rising. So do a little homework, right? Go up, see what they're saying about Brandon Rose, and maybe he's the guy. There is an advantage if you make it an advantage.
So when you and Jeff get together and are talking on a daily basis on your show, what's the Pac-12 football buzz right now? What are people talking about? What's the storyline? Again, I don't want media rights. We know what that deal is. But on the football field in the spring or whatever, football-related, what's the conference buzz right now?
Well, to some extent, like, people want it to be Colorado, but we already talked about what Colorado's going to be, right? They're going to be a fun story and an interesting thing to follow. I think as much as Jeff hates it, I think the story is Washington. What is Washington football really, right? They were a few snaps away from being a college football playoff team last year when nobody had any expectations of them. They had the leading passing quarterback in the entire country last year, a transfer portal guy who had had mixed success at Indiana. So I think Washington is the real, like, for me, the number one story. We know that USC is going to be good, right? We know that they're going to try and plug some of the holes that existed on their defense. Whether they're able to do that or not while retaining Alex Grinch as defensive coordinator, I'm pretty skeptical of, quite frankly. But Washington does not have these obvious, like, weaknesses to bolster. They just played a bad game last year and got themselves a second loss that kept them kind of out of the picture because of the way the math worked. I think they're going to be damn good and potentially the class of the Pac-12 conference. For me, that's the story.
Can you make a case, though, they dodged USC and Utah, so we don't know quite how good they were?
Sure, absolutely you can make that case. Now, I think they would have matched up well with USC because USC couldn't stop a runny nose sometimes defensively. Utah probably would have been a tougher out for them, but Utah's pass rush wasn't spectacular last year in a lot of situations, so who knows how something like that could have shaken out, right? It's everyone's going to be talking about USC because of who they are, the brand that they are. Everyone's going to be talking about Utah because of the two-time defending champs. Everyone's going to be talking about Oregon because Oregon is the big brand and Bo Nix is back and all that stuff. And Washington deserves to be in, like, the exact same level of that conversation because things about a ball bounces differently. Arizona State game goes a little different. That team is on the championship stage in DeBoer's first year. And that's really something.
I'm actually more intrigued by Oregon State than any other team in the spring right now, because I'm not sure how good DJ really is. You know, he was hyped out of high school and he was just okay in a year and a half at Clemson. They've got a lot of pieces around him. They lost a little bit to graduation. I think Jonathan Smith's a good coach, but them being good and them being really good or great might hinge on the – now, he'll be an upgrade over what they had. There's no doubt about that, because those guys – you talked about USC's defense, you know, couldn't you know, stop a cold or stop a runny nose. Oregon State's pass attack was putrid. So he'll be an upgrade, but how much of an upgrade is he? And if he's a real upgrade, they might be the best team.
Yeah, they lose a lot defensively, unfortunately, including a transfer. Omar Spates left, their best linebacker.
Yeah, that's
which
true.
Is a bummer. That stinks for them because, you know, Jonathan Smith does not experience a lot of attrition. Like, that's Utah football light he's got going on up there in Corvallis. And he's trying to make it Utah football heavy, but right now it's Utah football light. He's unabashed in the way that he's trying to do things the same way that Kyle Whittingham has done things in Salt Lake. And I think that's the right approach because of where he's at. They lose a lot of things defensively. And DJU, right, the name value is one thing, but if you just take possession for possession, if you just take how he actually played at Clemson versus what the quarterbacks did at Oregon State last year, he doesn't need to be one lick better than he was at Clemson, where he was slightly above average, right? He doesn't need to be any better than he was. And Oregon State is at least a 10-win team last year if they have that quarterback play instead of what they got. Like, it's crazy the way that their quarterbacks, who I'm sure are all nice fellows and hardworking individuals, they just shot the team in the foot over and over. The game against Utah is the perfect example. You just had ineptitude and turnovers and poor execution that if you just remove the turnovers and you remove the points off turnovers that Oregon State gave up last year, they're a markedly better team. And one thing that DJ Uiagalelei was okay at Clemson, not spectacular, but better than the Oregon State quarterbacks, is he didn't give other teams the ball. He didn't give other teams points. Maybe he wasn't lighting up the scoreboard for Clemson, and that's obviously what's expected there, but he wasn't handing wins to other teams. So he doesn't need to be any better than he was in a Clemson uniform, and he'll make Oregon State's offense better.
For more insight like that, listen to him and Jeff Schwartz daily on Channel 373 Sirius XM Pac-12 Radio. Thanks, Sean.
Love talking to you, Bill. Thanks.
Take care. That's the great Sean O'Connell with us here. And as good a football analyst as he is, if you've ever seen him on the ESPN Pro Fighting League stuff, he is fantastic there too. A man of many talents.